Hello. This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 12th of February, 2016. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling and Valerie Lilly. Your readers today are Maria Head.
Hello.
And Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are: Report condemns City Council over Silver Hill, College defends plan as unrests grow, and residents face 4% rise in tax. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Mariah?
Report condemns City Council over Silver Hill. Winchester City Council has been condemned over its unlawful handling of the Silver Hill scheme, with an independent investigator telling civic chiefs, "Winchester deserves better." Leaders failed to listen to the public, mishandled legal advice, and lacked vision for plans to transform part of the city centre, according to a report by solicitor Claire Lloyd-Jones. Council leader Stephen Godfrey hit back at the findings, accusing Mrs. Lloyd-Jones of offering unsubstantiated opinions and inaccuracies. It comes as rebel Tory Councillor Kim Gottlieb prepares to launch a second court battle against the council. Councillors have voted to walk away from their development partner, TH Real Estate. The final decision to end the contract was set to be taken by Cabinet yesterday, as the Chronicle went to press. Miss Lloyd-Jones was appointed last year to review decisions which led to a High Court ruling that the council breached EU law. The judicial review, launched and funded by Councillor Gottlieb, found the council should have invited bids from other developers in 2004 and 2014. Ms. Lloyd-Jones called for an overhaul of the council's constitution and decision-making process. She said it was obvious, as early as 2007, that the scheme was at risk of challenge. Losing the JR has vindicated the views held by some that the council doesn't listen to its citizens and that Winchester deserves better, she said. Neither the council nor its officers were equipped in skills or experience to have negotiated a successful outcome. Council chiefs deny suggestions that they geared legal advice towards putting through the scheme. They also believe Ms. Lloyd-Jones accepted objectors' versions of events without asking for a response from the council. Councillor Godfrey said, "I am disappointed with the main body of the report, which contains unsubstantiated opinions and inaccuracies and little reference to the many reports, documents and interviews that apparently informed the report." Ms. Lloyd-Jones, who conducted 57 interviews and read thousands of pages of documents, denied that she had made factual error. The reports added, "There is an absence of internal challenge and debate on Silver Hill, both among members and officers. There is no whip on the issue and a reliance on cross-party support, meaning that there is no challenge from an opposition party." Ms. Lloyd-Jones was set to face questions from the Audit Committee and Overview and Scrutiny Committee last night. Council Chief Executive Simon Eden set out his response in a paper that tackled suggestions that the council may have geared legal advice. "It is perfectly normal for a client to propose a course of action and wishes to be assured it is legal. In that sense, Winchester did have a particular view reflecting members' desire to progress the scheme." Ms. Lloyd-Jones said advice given by Paul Nichols, QC, in 2014 was out of step with previous opinions. highlighting the risks of a legal challenge and should have been investigated in order to prevent the High Court defeat. In a letter to the council, Mr. Nichols said his advice was consistent with legal opinions he had been shown at the time. There is a case which shows that different views can be reached on questions of law, he said. In her 13 recommendations, Ms. Lloyd-Jones called for the council to rewrite its constitution, reassess the skills of officers, and rebuild public trust. Ms. Lloyd-Jones said that Councillor Gottlieb's potential conflicts of interest should be investigated. The Winchester Deserves Better leader, himself a property developer, issued a legal warning to the council last week as it moved to protect the scheme's planning permission. The planning committee voted not to block 19 conditions which could have stopped permission expiring yesterday.
Oh, it's, college defends plans as unrest grows. Peter Simmons College has defended plans for a new arts complex after protests from scores of residents. Locals say their lives have been made intolerable by the number of students being funneled down residential streets on their way to and from the Winchester Sixth Form College. They fear the emerging scheme is the first step towards wider expansion and say a new entrance would send students into a blind corner. College chiefs deny any safety risks and say they need to break out of the congested campus because existing art buildings are not fit for purpose. Plans for the new facility, which would face away from the main site and towards Winchester Railway Station, are in their early stages. Responding to a campaign letter backed by more than 150 people, Chairman of Governors Charles Scott said, "The need of the college for a new building has arisen because some of the current accommodation has reached the end of its natural life. And to renew within the main area of the site over the longer term, it is necessary to break out of the confined and congested area of buildings. The location for the proposed new building has been the subject of extensive discussion between the college and its professional advisers, who in turn have consulted with Winchester City Council's planning department. College bosses will meet this month to discuss the issues." And that's accompanied by a photograph of a large number of residents of the area obviously objecting to the scheme.
Residents face 4% rise in tax. A 4% council tax rise has been approved across Hampshire after civic chiefs voted to end a long-standing freeze. Ratepayers will be hit for the first time in 6 years after Hampshire County Council set a budget to tackle a £48 million black hole. UKIP called on County Chief Roy Perry to resign from the role, saying he'd failed to take on the government over the budget travesty. The Conservative-led council said Shire counties had been unfairly targeted by the government, with Hampshire facing a 37% cut in grant. The rate increase, including a 2% rise to help fund social care, was approved at Cabinet last Friday. It will cost a Band D ratepayer an extra 80p a week and raise £20.4 million a year, enough to fill around 40% of the shortfall. The cut of £48 million next year, more than double what the council expected, means it will have slashed nearly half a billion pounds since 2010. Calling on the council leader to resign, UKIP leader, Councillor Chris Wood, said, "I'm aghast at the complete and utter lack of any backbone from the leader of this council or his cabinet to properly resist the measures placed upon them by Westminster." Councillor Perry resisted the call to quit, quoting from a letter he sent to David Cameron last month expressing deepest concerns about the budget cuts for 2016-17. He added, "We enter this round of having the county council with the second lowest council tax precept. My guess is that we will certainly retain the position of being the county with the second lowest precept in the country, but still with an unenviable record of services we produce. I'm sure we'll be able to avoid compulsory redundancies as we have done in the past. Government grants have been cut by an average 30% in counties like Hampshire, compared to 19% in Inner London and 25% in authorities like Southampton. Critics say the council should have dipped into its £400 million reserves.
That concludes the headlines, and we continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Brodie, James Brodie, peacefully, aged 78. Broom, Gladys Broom, aged 95. Fern, Dom Fern, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital after a short illness, aged 85. Forsey, Dorothy Hazel Forsey, peacefully in Winchester Hospital, aged 82. Hunter, Joyce Margaret Esther Hunter, peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Norris, Phyllis Ivy Norris, at Abbeygate Care Home, aged 88. Reed, Sally Reed, at home, aged 91. Rogers, Dawn Rogers, at home. Rogers, Vera Rose Rogers, peacefully at home, aged 91. Russell, Andrew David Russell, aged 67. Truckle, Betty Truckle, peacefully in Winchester Hospital, aged 83. Tuttiot, Jack Tuttiot, peacefully after a short illness, aged 86. And Wolford, Terence Philip Wolford, aged 65. Christian comment this week is read by Maria. Thank you.
And the subject of this week's Christian comment is the meaning of Ash Wednesday. This Wednesday was Ash Wednesday in the Christian church. What exactly is Ash Wednesday? Where does it come from? It's not in the Bible, obviously, but some of its ideas are. Ash Wednesday has its origins in the early Christian church, somewhere between the 6th and 8th centuries. Originally, the idea was that a Christian, as a sign of repentance, would sprinkle ashes on his or her head. Where did this idea come from? In the Bible, ashes were always associated with humility and mortality, fasting and remorse. If you had sinned against God and you felt remorse about that sin, and you were repenting of that sin, then sometimes, in the Bible, you would sprinkle ashes on your head as a sign of sorrow and repentance. Ashes were supposed to remind you that you were mortal, that you will eventually become ashes after you die. We're only ashes, and we need to repent of our sins now, while God gives us a time of grace. During the 6th or 7th centuries, Christian churches thought about this idea. People, in private, at times, would sprinkle ashes on themselves as a sign of repentance. Eventually, this became a public practice. Instead of sprinkling the ashes on your head, the ashes would be rubbed onto the forehead in the shape of a cross. It was a sign of repentance and a reminder of your baptism when the sign of the cross was placed on you with water and the word. The ashes would actually be taken from the palm branches before Palm Sunday, burned the year before. Some churches today have retained this practice, while others have let the practice go. For every Christian, ashes or not, Ash Wednesday marks the beginning of the somber season of Lent. Lent is a 40-day span of time from now until Easter. The 40 days of Lent do not include Sundays, because each Sunday is considered a miniature Easter, a time of joy and celebration of Christ's resurrection. Why 40 days? Right after Jesus was baptized, the Bible tells us that Jesus went out into the desert to fast and to be tempted by the devil for 40 days. For Jesus, those 40 days were a time of introspection, a time when he battled the temptations of the devil and emerged stronger than he had been before. For us, Lent is a time when we make that journey with Jesus Christ. We think about our temptations, our sins, and we repent. After these 40 days, we hope to emerge stronger than we had been before. Lent is that time when you do some spring cleaning in your soul in preparation for Easter.
Now we have letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Brian. Thank you, Brian.
Right. Michael Cady says, "What do we do? Sir, the latest chapters in the Silver Hill scandal have highlighted some of the qualifications seemingly needed to be a senior councillor or official on Winchester City Council. These qualifications include jaw-dropping arrogance, inability to see the blindingly obvious, inability to behave in the best interests of Winchester, hatred of any opinion not theirs, especially when commissioned that opinion in the first place as a way of digging themselves out of a hole they'd previously dug for themselves. But seriously, what are the citizens of Winchester to do in the face of this truly shocking state of affairs? If they leave it to this lot in the city, we'll be wrecked. Something like an actual rebellion needs to take place, and soon." And that's from Michael Cady of Upsombourne.
The second letter is from Karen Barrett and is headed Political Amnesia. "Sir, in her report, Claire Lloyd-Jones refers to the cross-party support on the Silver Hill issue, which has effectively stifled any formal opposition. It is certainly a sad state of affairs when only a handful of Winchester City councillors were prepared to break ranks and take action on behalf of the community. This is why the Winchester Deserves Better campaign has attracted such widespread support. My involvement was triggered by Henderson's 2014 amended scheme, which removed the on-site affordable housing and bus station. At the time, I spoke to a number of councillors from different parties, but none seemed unduly concerned, possibly because few relied on public transport and none were on a housing waiting list. The Conservative ruling group and the Liberal Democrats participated in the process which allowed Henderson to submit its planning application, and members of both parties voted in favour at the planning committee meeting in December 2014. I was left speechless, therefore, on reading the statement on your front page last week from the current leader of the Lib Dem group. In commenting on the decision to sever ties with the developer, Councillor Thompson said, 'Now we know there will be no affordable housing and no proper bus facilities, there should be no deal.' A sad case of political amnesia." And that's from Karen Barrett of Byron Avenue, Winchester.
And this letter from Martin Humphrey is titled, "We're Hard at Work to Create a Plan." "Sir, I am responding as chairman of Winchester Dramatic Society to Liz Horne's letter, Chronicle January the 28th, regarding the proposed annex to the Chesil Theatre. The illustration used in the article may have come from the newspaper's archives. That illustration was from 10 years ago for a joint development between St John's Winchester Charity and Winchester Dramatic Society. St John's interests in that scheme have changed, and they have since been exploring various possibilities for the site, all of which have incorporated an annex for the Chesil Theatre. Winchester Dramatic Society did obtain planning permission for a second scheme in 2013, which did have more traditional elevations. St John's continues to explore options, and Winchester Dramatic Society are working hard to produce a joint scheme which we hope will meet with approval. Martin Humphrey, Winchester Dramatic Society, Chesil Theatre, Winchester." And there is a lovely colour photo of the beautiful Chesil Theatre with this with this letter.
This is from Penny Pugh, Truth of Proposal. "Sir, people who live next to Peter Simmons College have learned from experience not to treat the college's public statement as either binding or true. A few years ago, they replaced their armoury building on Hatherley Road with a new and much larger structure. At the time, the college insisted there would be no further buildings along Hatherley Road. Now we have a proposal for a new art block. For years, the college has told their neighbours they have no plans to expand any more. But year after year, numbers rise and the level of activity increases, including the numerous maintenance, delivery vans and lorries that go through the Owens Road entrance. Already, Peter Simmons is twice the size of Richard Taunton's sixth form college and has 1,000 more students than Barton Peverell. What is the truth? And that's from Penny Pugh of Owens Road, Full Flood.
The second letter about the Peter Simmons development, headed Why the Change, comes from Lucia Taylor. It is clear from your recent coverage that most residents of Full Flood do not want Peter Simmons College to put up a big new arts block on the open land close to its boundary with Haverley Road. Shouldn't the college be looking at other sites or explaining why none is suitable? I gather that planning permission was granted to the college 2 years ago to extend the existing arts buildings. There were no objections to that proposal and the permission is still valid. Again, perhaps the college can explain why it has changed its mind. Anyone who cares about the appearance and character of Winchester will want the college to improve its facilities without any loss of green space or the felling of distinctive and much-loved Victorian trees. That's from Lucia Taylor, West End Terrace, Winchester.
Bus station woes. Sir, while the City Council prevaricates over the new development in the city centre, the bus station is a real eyesore. We should be ashamed to present such a run-down, out-of-date building to the many visitors who come to Winchester. I believe it indicates that very few councillors use the buses, despite urging the rest of us to leave our cars at home, or they would see for themselves the mess that is called Winchester Bus Station and hang their heads in shame. I do not blame any of the people employed there, for I think they do a good job in depressing surroundings. For a prosperous, vibrant city, this building is a disgrace. Brian Astle, brother, Hospital of St Cross, St Cross Road, St Cross, Winchester.
And Dr Michael Bennett writes about the new sports centre. Sir, it's been announced that Winchester University has proposed contributing £6 million towards a new sports centre. I understand that it's essential to the university for an Olympic-sized pool to be included. I'm told this would not fit in the River Park site. Therefore, a site at Bar End is preferred. I'm sure this could become a major attraction in the region, particularly to those interested in swimming as a competitive sport. Cars will travel miles down the M27 and M3 to use the facilities. But is this going to benefit Winchester citizens? River Park Sports Centre is at risk, as it is likely to be sold to finance the Bar End development. It might become a housing estate, a car park, or exclusive sports club, but it will not be a sports centre for the ordinary people of Winchester. When it's gone, the option for making, e.g. those in Hairstock, Takedown, Week, Hyde and Full Flood, will be to drive the family across the city to Bar End and back. Given the ever-growing traffic jams in the city centre, this will put off vast property of majority of families. There are few alternatives, much that I would like a network of safe cycle paths or underground railway. They are unlikely to materialise. The city's housing is expanding enormously as the traffic and pollution are getting worse. River Park needs modernising, but this is no reason for Winchester residents to lose a central sports centre which is within walking distance for thousands of households. The City Council previously suggested the River Park Sports Centre could be expanded onto the adjacent cricket pitch, but quite rightly, this encroachment onto the valuable green space was opposed by local residents. What was clear from the consultation at the time was that alternatives within the boundaries of the existing sports centre had not been seriously considered. These should be researched thoroughly now. And that's from Dr. Michael Bennett of Fordington Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
A letter headed Cleaner Energy from Hugh Payne. It is great to see solar panels installed on the roof of St. Paul's Surgery in Winchester. long-term clean energy to supply the practice's daily needs and to feed back into the grid. Please would County Council planners promote solar power for other community buildings and the City Council enforce national building regulations requiring new build developers to have regard to renewables. What tenant or buyer wouldn't want to choose a home that came with thousands of hours of free electricity each year? Uruguay has hugely decarbonised its economy, with renewables now providing 94.5% of its electricity. Let us follow its lead. That's from Hugh Payne of Alison Way, Winchester.
Sir, general practice is at breaking point, with almost 7 out of 10, 65.9%, of GP practices in the South telling the BMA that the quality of service to patients has deteriorated in the last 12 months. This is the highest level of deterioration in the country, and almost three quarters, 72%, of practices say the current workload is unmanageable a lot or all of the time. This is the result of rising workload, including increasing patient demand for appointments, which is placing unsustainable pressure on GP services that have been starved of resources and staff, leaving patients waiting longer to see a GP. Across England, there were more than 600 GP trainee positions left unfilled in 2015, while a third of the workforce are considering retirement in the next 5 years. This comes at a time when GP practices across the country are seeing 150,000 more patients each day than in 2010, but have seen no extra resources to maintain effective, safe care to the public. Politicians have to realise that general practice is currently running on empty. GPs desperately want to provide the best possible service for patients, but we need improved resources and support to provide patients with the care they deserved. Dr. Shand Nagpal, GP Committee Chairman, British Medical Association.
Looking back, we now look at news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Brian.
And that was February the 12th, 1816. And the first part of this is Protecting Girls. We feel pleasure in announcing the establishment of a female asylum in this city. By the indefatigable exertions of its benevolent projectors, a fund has been raised and 17 girls have been admitted, who, besides receiving a religious and moral education, will be instructed in the various household avocations requisite to make them good servants and useful members of society. The importance of such an institution in a moral point of view is obvious. The friendless and unprotected female is here trained to the paths of industry and virtue, who previously might have fallen a prey to seduction. And the second item is Pit Worker Killed. During an assemblance of colliers in consequence of a reduction in their wages at Tipton New Church Colliery, a boy threw a piece of ironstone down the shafts of one of the pits, which, falling upon the head of Isaac Whitehouse, aged 14, who was with another boy, was waiting in the skip to ascend, instantaneously killed him. The whimsy, however, was not at that time in motion.
And 100 years ago, on February the 12th, 1916, the first item is headed Air Raid Warning. We are asked to give publicity to the following official notice. Cellars are the refuges which offer the best chances of safety from bombs which may be dropped. Under no circumstances should people congregate in the open streets. All persons should immediately take cover once the steam whistle has been sounded. In case of an aircraft raid, all supplies of gas and electricity in the city will immediately cut off at the works, and so long as danger may continue to exist, these supplies will not be restored. In any event, should gas and electricity be cut off, neither will be available before 8 o'clock the following morning. And the second item continues the theme. It's headed Alarm Testing. Arrangements have been made for the steam whistle to be sounded at the electricity works on Sunday, tomorrow, at 1 o'clock p.m. The blast will be of 5 minutes duration and residents need not be in any way alarmed. The authorities consider it desirable to test the whistle and also to give the public an opportunity of distinguishing the sound from that of other whistles, sirens or hooters which they may have heard from time to time.
And there are two items from 50 years ago, February the 12th, 1966. POW's daring escape. Mr. John Evans gave an interesting talk to the Alsford and District Club on Friday week concerning his capture and subsequent escape from a prisoner of war camp during World War II. Mr. Evans described his capture by German troops in North America when the brigade with which he was serving was overrun by the African Corps. He was taken to a transit camp and handed over to the Italians, who shipped him with hundreds of other men of his brigade in the hold of a small cargo boat across the Mediterranean to Italy. After several months in different POW camps, he was herded with other prisoners into cattle trucks bound for Poland. It was during this journey that Mr. Evans jumped to freedom. And the second item, demo on Vietnam. The Action Council at Southampton University and the Southampton Group of CND are holding a march through the city today, Saturday, in protest against American bombing raids on North Vietnam. The march will begin at 3 p.m. opposite the Ordnance Survey offices and end in a public meeting at the Cenotaph, Southampton, at about 4:15 p.m. The meeting will give a send-off to some of the participants in the march on their way to Westminster. There they aim to be received by some of the 90 MPs who signed the telegram to President Johnson that called for a cessation of the bombing.
The Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is headed Silver Hill, toxic and should be scrapped. Oh, I'm sorry, we have another item of news from 25 years ago.
Yes, we've been nearly cutting it out. For February the 8th, 1991. Water Tower Home. Winchester architect Mr. Michael Carden was given the go-ahead by city planners last week for one of the most unusual assignments, transforming a delightful old water tower into residential use. The lofty commission is about 33 feet high and stands in 50 acres of Sutton Manor Nursing Home at Sutton Scotney, where the owner, Mrs. Cornelius Reed, wants it to be used for nursing accommodation. Mr. Carden of the Radley House Partnership sees his brief as an interesting challenge and has no plans to change the appearance of the brick-built tower, which was put up probably at the turn of the century to bring water to the estate. And the second item is stream on display. A chalk stream will soon be flowing inside the Highwood Barn Visitor Centre at Eastleigh's Itchen Valley Park, Valley Country Park. A unique project undertaken by students from the Hampshire Agricultural College at Sparsholt and sponsored by British Gas Southern will see the creation of a 10-foot section of the stream to form part of the park's interpretive display. Water will be pumped through the stream to create both fast and slow-moving currents and will sustain a variety of wildlife. The project will be built in a glass tank.
Right, now, having slapped myself over the knuckles, we come to the Hampshire editorial comment. Silver Hill toxic and should be scrapped. The Claire Lloyd-Jones report is one of the most extraordinary documents in recent Winchester public life. Nobody escapes criticism, and the City Council is lashed for pressing on with Silver Hill when it was obvious in 2007 that it was heading into legal trouble. The council officers and members were not on top of the job. The council structure, reorganised to be more modern, was not fit for purpose. Yet whilst acknowledging it was a perfect storm, she seemingly omits to take that into account. Hindsight is a wonderful thing. Ms. Lloyd-Jones unwisely echoes the name of the Anti-Silver Hill group. Looks like she is playing to the gallery. And the force of her report is diluted by several instances of poor judgment. She mentions corruption, but then says there is no evidence. Why mention it? A terrible smear. She also says that Councillor Kim Gottlieb, widely known to be a London property developer, should be investigated. What for? But the fact remains that despite its failings, this is a damning report, which the council should not seek to sidestep. Yet the council appears keen on carrying on with the Silver Hill scheme, just without co-developer THRE. That would be another mistake. The Silver Hill brand is now so toxic that anything other than starting again from scratch will be tainted, and like a cancer, infect all city council work. Now we have First Person, which is read by Brian.
And this was by Khalid Aziz, and it's A Perfect Storm. Warning. Having waded through Claire Lloyd-Jones' report on Silver Hill, you could be forgiven for thinking no one comes out well in the sorry saga that stretches back to 2003. The report, pithily entitled A Perfect Storm, sideswipes all. Councillors and council officers, neither the council nor its officers was equipped in skills and experience to have negotiated a successful outcome. The lawyers, various specialist QCs consulted allegedly, gave contradictory advice, albeit against a moving legal landscape that pitted EU against UK law. Even whistleblower Kim Gottlieb, who took the council to judicial review, doesn't escape. An issue concerning Councillor Gottlieb's potential conflicts of interest has been raised with me. This needs to be investigated. As I write, the developers are appealing against the judicial review, and a report from the council officers to councillors questions Miss Lloyd-Jones's methodology. The council has given it Henderson's an ultimatum to get started and just add spice to the mix. The deadline for compulsory purchase order expires on March the 19th, and only the developers have the £30 million needed to make the purchase. The whole story turns on how councils promote redevelopment of an ageing city centre. Common sense, never mind the law, dictates that the process should start with a wide net, attracting a range of opinions and potential developers from which to draw the best solution. However, thinking they had the best deal possible, the council decided to go exclusively with Thornfields. When they subsequently went bust, the deal was acquired by Henderson's. If all had gone to plan, the development would have been completed in 2012. At all stages, councillors, relying on advice from their officers backed by eminent barristers, felt that they were in the right and were dumbfounded that they'd lost the judicial review. Hence the inquiry, costing to date £66,000, to find out how it happened. The protest campaign styled itself Winchester Deserves Better, and who can argue with that? But there are bigger issues at stake, possibly. Perhaps the democratic process itself is part of the issue. Since 2003, no fewer than 10 council leaders have been at the helm, all understandably deeply involved in Silver Hill. The leaders have been of varying political stripe, but that is not as significant as it sounds, as there was broad cross-party support for the scheme. What is clear is that although the council decisions are supposed to be councillor-led, the democratic process requiring a third of the council to be up for re-election every year, according to Ms. Lloyd-Jones, took the collective eyes of both councillors and officers off the ball. The scheme was just too big for this to happen without tears. Developers are notorious for nibbling, trying to vary a development agreement to their advantage. At one stage, they wanted affordable housing to be built elsewhere. The unspoken reason for being that the unwashed affordable tenants would reduce the marketability and achievable rents in the upmarket part of the development. Resisting such overtures requires resolve and consistency, hard to achieve if the complexion of the council keeps changing. Winchester Council is party political, and as such, councillors are required to be loyal to their group. Groups can sometimes be guilty of groupthink. This is the phenomenon where people take or acquiesce to group decisions that they wouldn't come close to entertaining if asked to take individual responsibility. Perhaps that's what happened here. Apparently, there are moves afoot in Winchester to field independent candidates for May's council elections. Perhaps such independence would lessen the tendency towards a groupthink. Winchester deserves better. It certainly does. Let's hope the Silver Hill debacle at least inspires a greater turnout at the polls.
Belgarum's alternative look at the news this week comprises three items, the first of which is headed HQ Will Be Missed. It has long been considered an eyesore by many, but one Winchester City Councillor poured his heart out to the police HQ that is due to be demolished for the new housing. Normally there are few friends for such examples of 1960s modernist architecture designed by the county architect H. Benson Ansell in 1962-65. Councillor Ian Tate told the planning committee, "I have lived in the shadow of it for many years and have grown to love it. It will be a sad day when it goes. It is a significant building in the city." Pevsner's Guide to Hampshire Buildings said, "A reasonable building, but placed as it is on a hilltop, it engages for more attention than should have been allowed."
Furry toys return to town. The Aylesford Museum is delighted to have acquired a collection of over 120 soft toys manufactured in the town by Aylesford Crafts. They were a major employer in the town until 1992, when competition from the Far East forced them to cease trading at Station Mill. Many people around the world know of Aylesford because it is the original home of these much-loved and cuddled toys. Former resident Verena Harper, knee Peg, has collected the furry stuffed animals for 40 years and had worked at the factory making the toys back in the 1970s. Since retiring and moving to Dorset, she has built this large and varied collection with the help of many friends, some of whom still live in Aylesford. But now is the time for the whole family to return home. The museum will add these toys to their other collections of ceramic dolls and soft cuddly animals made by Aylesford Crafts. The new additions include glove puppets, around 15 owls of various sizes and colours, and some unique toys like a penguin, a brown hen and a blue lamb. Verena's collection included an Aylesford pig puppet with pink fur. This has joined up with another recent addition to the museum, a pink rabbit made by Aylesford Crafts, which was recently returned home from Georgia, USA. Displays of the collection will be on show in the Aylesford Library in Broad Street, particularly upstairs in the children's section, and at various other museum events throughout the coming year. Lists of the museum collections can be found on www.museum.aylesford.org. That's www.museum.aylesford.org. The museum is one of the responsibilities of the Aylesford Town Trust that also owns the Eel House and the Avenue. And there are two very colourful pictures with this article of our great host of furry toys with two very pink pigs.
Zero fuel at zero price. It's been widely reported in recent weeks that petrol prices have dropped to an 8-year low. Even diesel has fallen below the pound mark. But have you ever seen a petrol station giving their product away? Well, this is what Bar End Road petrol station has done, kind of. Motorists have been rubbing their eyes in disbelief upon seeing the massive price fall. The sign outside the garage indicates unleaded for 0p per litre. However, they've just have no unleaded to sell whilst maintenance work is carried out.
Now this week's announcements, and we start with What's On, with several events in and around Winchester. On Monday the 15th of February at 3pm in Winchester Cathedral Undercroft, you can get tea at 3. All are welcome. On Saturday the 27th of February at 7pm in Winchester Cathedral, there is the Cathedral Group Choir Festival 2016. The programme includes the Gloria and Choral Extravaganza by John Rutter. Tickets at £10 can be booked on 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. On Friday the 18th of March at the Theatre Royal Winchester, there's a charity concert in aid of children's cancer and the Alzheimer's Society. The cost is £16 and the box office number is 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. And a reminder that every day from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m, coffee and light eats are available at the United Church in Jewellery Street, Winchester. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 12th of February at 7:27 a.m. and begins at 5:13 p.m. On Wednesday the 17th of February it ends at 7:15 a.m. and begins at 5:24 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And now we continue with items of general news. Thank you, Maria.
Letter from Westminster comes from George Hollingbury MP. Everyone has seen a welcome drop in petrol prices over the last few months, with the amount we're paying heading down to £1 a litre or even less. These seem like the good old days of cheap fuel, but don't get too nostalgic. Prices have only fallen to what they were around 8 years ago. How time flies when you're filling up. The reason for this sudden drop is the collapse in global oil prices. There are lots of different indexes to price oil, but in broad terms, it was around $110 a barrel in 2014 and is now $32 a barrel. The reasons are myriad, but in a very general nutshell, include overproduction in countries like Russia and Saudi Arabia, a lack of demand due to a global economic slowdown, and cheap fuel from American frackers. In our backyard, this oil price collapse has hit hard the North Sea operators. So it's clear there are winners and losers. It's good for hard-pressed families who can now get to work more cheaply, but bad for oil and gas jobs and investment in the North Sea, and bad for oil-producing countries like Russia, who are losing vast sums. Now, you might think, who cares about Russia or Nigeria or Venezuela? But these days, the UK is not an island when it comes to the global economy. Cheap prices means slack demand, and with China struggling for the growth it is used to and the Eurozone failing to muster much economic expansion, there runs the risk of a big slowdown that could cost UK jobs. And oil is not called black gold for nothing. Lower prices can have a destabilising effect and increase threats like the chance of conflict or coups. So when times seem good, there is always a cloud on the horizon, and the UK does have threats to its economy that are out of its control. On the plus side, fossil fuels days are numbered. 30 years ago, many forecast oil running out and catastrophe as energy became rationed. But technology and climate change fears have come to our rescue. Last December, 200 countries signed an agreement in Paris to cut greenhouse gases in a move that has signalled an end to the fossil fuel era. This is not the pie in the sky stuff that it used to be when oil was king. This is a real commitment to shift to cleaner, renewable technologies. The UK has 10 gigawatts of offshore wind farm capacity, either installed or under construction. Solar and onshore wind farms are also adding to the energy mix. Electric cars will replace petrol vehicles in the years to come, and articles like this, talking about how important oil is, will be a footnote in history.
Council development set to go ahead despite safety concerns. A council housing development in Winchester is to be built despite concern over the safety of its design. The complex in Abbots Barton will house 13 units, including 3 two-bedroom chalet bungalows and 2 terraces, the planning committee heard. Issues were raised about the cost of the complex, as it was suggested that some, if not all, of the houses would be put up for sale rather than be available for rent. However, a commitment to make it an affordable housing complex was stressed by the applicant Winchester City Council. Nevertheless, residents of Abbots Barton told city councillors they were unhappy that a car park to be located in the corner of Hillier Way could cause accidents. Councillor Carolyn Dibden, sharing their concerns, she said the road gets very busy on weekends and this could become a problem with cars reversing out onto a blind corner. Councillor Dominic Hiscock added, residents are concerned that considerations for road usage were not looked at. It's well known that farm vehicles use the road and certainly certain aspects of the development will affect this. Another issue raised was the views out of the windows of some of the residents' homes. The new houses will be directly impact on this, and the pleasure of using the gardens will also be lost. The plans received 12 letters of objection, with issues ranging from the loss of green space to increase in traffic and the impact on current residents. However, the City of Winchester Trust supported the scheme. They said, this development seems to be the result of a contextual study of the site and area. The design of the building seems sympathetic, although some material features, such as corner windows, could have been more fully described. Councillors unanimously approved the proposals, and Councillor Robert Johnson said it was a no-brainer and had to be built. The project is part of an overall programme to build 350 affordable homes in the district in 10 years. The council wants to build on a mix of open space and garages in Austin Close, Dyson Drive, Charles Close, Hussey Close, Hillier Way and Colborne Court. And there is a photograph of the development saying land now set to be built on Hillier Way, Abbots Barton.
Allegation of neglect is rejected. Hampshire Wildlife Trust says it's doing all it can to restore a Winchester beauty spot. As reported, concerns were raised at a town forum over St Faith's Meadow at St Cross. The meadow was leased to the Trust in 2012 and is part of the River Itchen site of special scientific interest. Natural England allocated £53,800 for tree removal, fencing, restoration of the ditches to improve habitats and to improve water flow and the clearance of invasive scrub. However, the area has been, quote, neglected, quote, according to St Cross resident Mike Gibbons. The Trust in a statement said it was improving the biodiversity of the meadowland. Martin Retuerto, the Trust's area head of conservation, said, land management is complex, but the Trust has a wealth of experience in restoring some of the Itchen Valley's most valuable sites for wildlife and people. At St Faith, we are pleased to be working with the City Council to restore this fen grassland, although it will take some time to reverse decades of damage. Through removing non-native poplar trees, introducing cattle grazing, installing seating, improving the footpath, and managing the Lochburn stream, we are slowly seeing signs of recovery. It's testament to the hard work of Trust staff and volunteers who spend a significant amount of time there, including engaging with the public and keeping the site clear of litter and dog's mess. The meadow will be discussed at the next town forum at Winchester Guildhall on Wednesday the 9th of March.
£300 given to hospice by grieving daughter. When her father died of cancer, she vowed to give something back to the hospice which looked after him. Now Georgia Reeves has raised hundreds of pounds after spreading Christmas cheer with handmade wrapping paper. Mick Reeves, a bricklayer of Main Road, Twyford, died aged 54 in the summer. Georgia 20 was truly inspired by staff at Countess Mountbatten Hospice at West End and used her design skills to raise money. Everyone in my family knows me to wrap up presents really well, and I enjoy it, she said. I decided I'd do something with my time and make something with wrapping paper. Mr. Reeves was given 6 months to live when he was diagnosed with bowel cancer 5 years ago. Despite various chemotherapies and participating in an initially successful drug trial, the cancer spread and eventually claimed him. My dad was an extremely memorable man. He had a big heart. He loved making people smile and leaving his mark on their lives. Georgia was set to hand over £300 last weekend after selling the paper and gift tags over Christmas. She paid tribute to the staff at the hospice, which supports people with life-threatening illnesses. The nurses truly inspired me and how big their hearts are. I wanted to show how thankful I was for what they did. A hospice spokesman said, "It is great to see the amazing ideas people come up with to fundraise." And there is a photo of George Reeves and his daughter in happier times.
First night home for brave Felix. It was something he probably never thought twice about, but this weekend saw a milestone moment for brave Felix Barrow as he walked through his own front door. It was the first time the Hampshire schoolboy had been back in his home in Swanmore since he was hit by a car on the way to school, leaving him with life-threatening injuries, including a fractured skull. For the last 130 days, Felix has been receiving treatment at Southampton General Hospital, where he's been trying to regain the ability to walk by himself. As part of his rehabilitation, Felix was allowed back home this weekend and was determined to walk through his own front door with his parents Vanessa and Stuart by his side. Proud mum Vanessa said, "Our hero had a big day today. This afternoon, Felix walked through his front door for the first time since his accident. That's 130 days in hospital." In typical Felix style, he was very determined to do so on his own, but was assisted by mum and dad, as you can see from the photo. Vanessa said Felix had been really excited about enjoying two nights in his own bed, and added his sisters are delighted that the family are reunited once more in their own home. Felix was on his way to Swanmore College when he was hit by a Toyota Yaris just yards from his front door on October the 7th. He suffered devastating injuries in the accident, including a fractured skull, broken jaw, fractured eye socket, broken leg, fractured knee, elbow and ankle. Doctors are unsure of what long-term damage has been done to the youngster's brain, but the family assure Felix's fighting spirit will help in his recovery. The family, which includes Felix's sisters Charlotte and Amelia, have launched a fundraising drive to help with Felix's recovery. The Fit for Felix campaign has already seen scores of people taking part in sponsored run featured in the Chronicle last month, and a number of events have also been organised. The Barrow family have just been busy in between visits to the hospital, organising the events both for the cause and for the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, and have set a target to raise £30,000 by the end of this year with Fit for Felix. Felix was due to return to hospital to continue his treatment, and there's a very nice colour photograph of Felix about to go through his front door with his parents beside him.
Theo Jones conquers Atlantic. He took on one of the most grueling rowing challenges known to man. An Alsford yachtsman is now part of an elite group who have rowed the Atlantic Ocean. Theo Jones of Broad Street finished the challenge last Thursday after setting off from Playa de la Calera, an island off the coast of Morocco, in December. The 27-year-old, whose day job is fixing million-pound yachts, arrived in Antigua within a time of 46 days, 9 hours and 32 minutes. He and Australian teammate Shane Chadwick finished ninth overall, beating 17 other teams. The pair, under the name Team Hesco, took on the challenge to try to raise £100,000 for two charities. The Not Forgotten Association provides recreation for wounded veterans, while Think Fragile X raises awareness of Fragile X syndrome, which causes intellectual and physical disabilities. After finishing, Theo said, "We had such an incredible experience, and the reception when we came into Antigua was unlike anything we could have ever imagined. It was brilliant, and we were so happy that we've completed such an exceptional adventure." During the race, the teams rode in shifts of 2 hours on and 2 hours off. The conditions are tough, as teams battle tropical storms, 40-foot waves, sleep deprivation, seasickness and body sores. As well as all these harsh conditions, this year's sailors also face the first tropical storm to form in January since 1978.
Green light for development. More than 200 homes will be built in the heart of Winchester after plans were given the green light. Hampshire Constabulary's former headquarters on Romsey Road will be knocked down to make way for the new homes. The City Council Planning Committee last Thursday heard the new development will provide 208 homes, including the 18 houses and 190 apartments. Affordable housing will also be supplied with 83 of the units leased under a rent-to-buy scheme. However, these properties have been placed nearest to the prison wall, which runs adjacent to the site. And Councillor Teresa Evans questioned why the buildings have been singled out by being placed in the least desirable location. Councillor Evans said, "A lot of councillors like me feel very strongly about affordable housing. I feel singling them out by making the two least desirable blocks nearest to the prison wall affordable housing is just wrong. The site will also provide 279 car parking spaces, mainly located in a basement car park." Nevertheless, city councillors were alarmed to hear the complex had only one vehicular access point, and this could prove a problem if it became blocked. David Gilchrist, for applicant Barclay Homes, said this was a problem that did not need addressing, as a substantial blockage would have to occur to disrupt the access. Other issues were raised about the design of the new buildings, as they were not in keeping with the look of the ex-police building. Subsequently, residents of the neighbouring West End Terrace were concerned by overlooking and the loss of light. However, these issues were extinguished as none of the buildings will be taller than the tree line. Councillor Liz Hutchinson, the local ward councillor, was unhappy that certain aspects had not been considered by Barclay. "I, like many people who live in the area, are very disappointed as the plans show no resemblance of the character of the area," said Councillor Hutchinson, who lives nearby on Clifton Road. "There are a lot of terraces in the area and they all have a number of different styles and interesting roof plans. None of this has been represented in their designs." Planning Committee member Councillor Robert Johnson said he was pleased with the design put forward as it will add to the local area. He added, "I quite like the scheme and think it will do well once it is completed." Councillor Ian Tate said he would be sad to see the 1960s building demolished. "It will be a sad day when the old police HQ is taken down. It is a significant building in the city. I have grown to love the building as I have lived in its shadow for many years." And there are two photos of this article, one of the old building, which is coming down, and an artist's impression of the new development.
Local winners in Curtain Call Awards. It has all the glitz and glamour of the Academy Awards. The Curtain Call Awards took place once again at Southampton's Grand Harbour Hotel. It sold out audience of more than 400 thespians, crew and theatre lovers gathered for the event, which celebrates the best of amateur dramatics. From village halls to top professional theatres, and from low budget to blockbuster productions, amateur theatre is thriving in Hampshire. The team of judges saw hundreds of productions in each genre: drama, comedy, musicals and operas, youth production, Shakespeare and pantomimes throughout 2015. A special guest was EastEnders actor Derek Martin, who opened the golden envelopes to reveal the winners. Winchester winners included Best Supporting Actress in a Drama, Karen Fitzsimmons, Mags in Beauty Queen of Lillane, Chesil Theatre, Mesmerising, Tough but Vulnerable. Best Supporting Actress in a Comedy or Comedy Drama, Lucy Moore, Ethel in Barefoot in the Park, Chesil Theatre, Lucy's sharp demeanour extended to her sharp delivery. Very funny. Youth Supporting Actor in Youth Production, Alejandro Agueles, Scar in The Lion King, King School Star in the Making. Best Actor in a Comedy or Comic Drama, David Craddock for production of Neville in third week in August, Cheriton Players. Best Lighting, Sound and Effects, Graham Arnott, Jamie Herdman and Mike Ludgate, third week in August, Cheriton Players. The difficulty of setting did not impede their talented backstage team. And the Best Director of Drama was Norma York for The Beauty Queen of Lillane at the Chesil Theatre, when she carefully built up a climax. And there's a photograph of all the award winners together.
Public sees mill plan. College chiefs have defended plans for a green gas mill to be built at Sparsholt, despite further protests from local community. Residents are concerned that the anaerobic digester, which turns grass into gas by boiling it, will create more traffic on the roads around Sparsholt College. However, a report by eco-gas supplier Ecotricity, who will finance and develop the mill, has shown traffic will only increase by 3%. Another issue raised at the consultation meeting on Tuesday was that vehicles transporting grass from local farms would be large lorries, but the college confirmed that the tractors with trailers will be used. College Principal Tim Jackson said, "We understand residents' concern about extra traffic in and out of the college. We have addressed these concerns in the planning application and can reassure people that the green gas mill will only receive normal farm traffic, such as tractors and trailers, which are typical of the countryside. The only difference is that the tractors will be coming into the college rather than the farmer taking their produce somewhere else," says Mr. Jackson. "A maximum of 3 tractors will enter the site every hour, and the drivers will have to use specific pre-planned routes or face disciplinary action. The entrance to the site has been designed to only be accessible from certain directions, which means that vehicles would avoid Sparsholt Village." However, Sparsholt resident Michael Hodder of Home Lane was not convinced by the plans. "My main objection is the transport situation," said Mr. Hodder. "The mill may be doing a lot of good for the environment, but tractors used for transporting the grass are diesel-powered. This makes it a completely pointless exercise and will block up our very narrow roads." As previously reported by the Hampshire Chronicle, the mill is expected to produce power for the equivalent of almost 5,000 homes per year, including the college. It will also pump £3 million into the local economy every year for the 20 years of its operation, said the college. Stuart Brennan, head of public relations at Exotricity, said, "We want to build hundreds of these mills all over the country, and this is our first step in doing so. Ecotricity wants to do a good job at Sparsholt, because if we don't, we'll never be able to build another green gas mill. It's clearly in our best interest to do a good job. Up to 8 specialist jobs will be created, while new supply contracts with farmers will also reinforce existing jobs on the land. Ecotricity will help fund the development of a renewable energy centre where the college can train students." A member of Winchester Action for Climate Change, Anne Weir, a Liberal Democrat city councillor, backed the plans. She said, "I think it's a really exciting scheme. It has the potential to create more jobs on farms in the area and also to save the environment in the process. I call that a win-win," said Councillor Weir, whose ward covers the Wick area. The villagers are generally worried that the digester will herald an intensification of use at the land-based college.
Warning after man scammed. Police are warning residents to be vigilant after a pensioner was conned out of £15,000 in a lottery scam. The 92-year-old from Alton received a call from someone he did not know last March and was persuaded to buy 75 Irish lottery tickets, being advised a win was common. He was asked for his debit card details so tickets could be bought on his behalf and was told evidence of the purchase would be sent by post. He was subsequently contacted again and asked if he wanted to take part in other lotteries in Europe and Australia, and told tickets would be bought on his behalf for the Italian and Australian lotteries. Over the next 3 months, 9 other purchases were made, most without his agreement, and he contacted his bank when he realised money had been taken without his consent. A subsequent investigation showed that more than £15,000 had been withdrawn from his bank account. Inspector Louise Rook said, "This matter has been referred to the National Action Fraud Team and is the only report of this type that we have received in East Hampshire at the moment. However, I'm keen that you should contact us on 101 to assist the investigation if you have been harassed by someone trying to sell you lottery tickets over the phone. If you have elderly relatives or neighbours, please share this information with them. Hampshire Constabulary is offering the following advice in the light of the scam. Never give out any personal information about your bank account to anybody over the phone. Never give your PIN number out in any form, including typing it into a keypad. If someone calls claiming to be a police officer, ask for their identification number and police force. Hang up the call and advise that you will call them back using the 101 number. A genuine police officer will not mind waiting while you check. Call them back from a different phone if possible, or wait at least 10 minutes before making the call to ensure they have not left the line open. If you have given out information which could compromise your bank account security in any way, call your bank up to cancel your cards as soon as possible. Never hand over money to someone at the door to be sent off elsewhere. If someone comes to your door claiming to be a police officer or staff member, always ask for identification and make a note of their identification number. Ask them to wait while you verify their identity. Close the door and call 101. Dial 999 if it is an emergency. Anyone who is concerned about similar incidents or has information relating to these incidents should contact police on 101.
Prevent huge urban sprawl call. The government must act to prevent Hampshire turning into a huge urban sprawl, the county's civic chief said. Councillor Roy Perry has told ministers to invest in infrastructure and protect the countryside under plans for a combined Hampshire and Isle of Wight authority. Local leaders are approaching crunch time over a deal which is set to devolve powers and multi-million pound budgets to the region, a meeting heard. Councillor Perry, leader of Hampshire County Council, called for new green belts around Southampton and Portsmouth, saying it was almost unbelievable that the only formal strip in the country was around Lymington. Hampshire should not become one large building plot. It's important that the community's settlements must not coalesce into one huge urban sprawl, he told County Council Cabinet last Friday. If the government cannot give these guarantees, they cannot be surprised if the people of Hampshire show reluctance over the scale of development urged upon us. Councillor Perry also called for investment in transport as part of the deal. The roads of Hampshire are congested. The railways of Hampshire are not up to scratch. There needs to be a big investment. And we are saying to the government that we want guarantees that on the infrastructure. Ministers believe the Hampshire bid is the front runner of the South. He added, I'm certain there'll be some form of devolution or local government reorganisation by the end of this Parliament.
Joy for University Chief. Winchester University boss Joy Carter is set to advise the government on improving access to higher education for students from poorer backgrounds. Professor Carter, Vice Chancellor, has been appointed to the Social Mobility Advisory Group, which will investigate helping underrepresented groups from school age through to university and beyond. A report to be published next summer will be presented to University's Minister Jo Johnson, with the panel's recommendations fed to David Cameron. Describing the invitation as a huge honour, Professor Carter vowed to continue the university's history of helping the disadvantaged. She said higher education should be a force for opportunity and social mobility, not for the entrenchment of privilege. It is implicit in our mission that we should seek to ensure that all who can benefit from a University of Winchester education will have the opportunity to do so, regardless of their background, and that we should do this with particular regard for marginalised groups. Professor Carter is one of 18 vice-chancellors and other figures from the sector who will look at the students' progression.
Great year for Warriors. Winchester City Basketball Club are celebrating after being named Winchester and District Sports Club of the Year. The club's junior section, especially at the younger age range, has really grown over the last year. As well as the numbers increasing, they have seen some of the potential of the young players shine through, thanks to the hard work of the coaching staff, led by Junior Development Officer Eddie Owusu. At the recent trials for the South Select teams, 10 boys and 10 girls from Winchester were selected across four teams to take on the Welsh under-11 and under-12 boys and girls sides next month. Next season, Winchester are to enter the National League with their under-14 boys and girls if they can find a suitable venue and a sponsor to keep the cost to the players' parents down. And there's a photo of about 50 of these young boys and girls who are having a lot of success.
Storm Imogen hits Hampshire. It buffeted the county with winds of nearly 100 miles an hour. Storm Imogen hit Winchester earlier this week with heavy rain and gales. With the sun shining throughout the morning on Monday, there was no indication the city would be affected by the storm. However, heavy winds halted commuters in their tracks, and crossing the road became more like an Olympic sport than an everyday exercise. Although there were no reports of damage in the city centre itself, a large tree was blown across one of the channels of the River Itchen near River Park Leisure Centre. In other parts of the county, several people had lucky escapes after trees came crashing down, narrowly missing cars and homes. The gale force winds also brought down power lines and caused travel chaos because of blocked roads. Cross Solent ferries were cancelled, including Red Funnel and Red Jet from Southampton to the Isle of Wight. The 96-mile-per-hour wind, the strongest in Britain on Monday, was recorded at the Needles Old Battery on the island. And there's a photograph of the trees dropped across the Itchen. Looks a bit of a mess.
Budding wizards at Harry Potter night. At their age, they're still dreaming of an invitation to Hogwarts. Budding witches and wizards kicked off their careers in magic with a Harry Potter night at a Winchester bookstore. Around 25 children, dressed up as their favourite characters, were there last Thursday for spell-making, potions, reading, and a hunt for the Golden Snitch. The event at Waterson's in High Street was one of several taking place across Britain to mark the latest reprint. The evening finished with a reading from Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. In years down the line, it's going to become a classic like The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, said store manager Fran Taylor. The children even enjoyed a spot of Quidditch, the broom-mounted sport played by Harry in the series. But some mega fans thought throwing soft balls through embroidery hoops didn't quite match up to the all-action game described in the books. Meanwhile, adult fans were left disappointed after a planned discussion in Winchester Discovery Centre was cancelled. And that has a photograph attached to it of a lot of young children all dressed up in their Harry Potter costumes.
insight into bats given at public talk from group. Members of the Hampshire Bat Group have been out and about with their hibernation surveys as part of vital work in protecting bat species. Last Sunday, members were at Northington Grange, Aylesford, and this Sunday, February the 14th, they will be at Privet Tunnel in the Meon Valley. The work is open only to members of the Hampshire Bat Group. Visit www.hampshirebatgroup.org.uk in advance. But an insight into bats will be given at a talk open to the public in Romsey. Nick Knight, chairman of the Hampshire Bat Group, will speak on the creatures and the threats they face today at the event in Crossfield Hall on February the 15th from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Admission is £4. For more information, call Janet Leviton on 01795 519 262. That's 01795 519 262 or email janetlev@hotmail.co.uk.
MP says, what does England want? Labour must embrace English patriotism and promise a referendum on introducing a national parliament, according to a former frontbencher speaking in Winchester. Tristram Hunt urged the party to be more honest about worries over immigration and cultural identity among its traditional English supporters. Mr. Hunt, a critic of leader Jeremy Corbyn, made the intervention in a speech at Winchester University last Thursday. Scottish independence referendum had allowed the country to reconnect with the power and wonder of democracy, and he wanted the English to experience the same kind of democratic awakening. The Welsh and the Scots have been asked their views on the future of their nation three times since 1973. It's high time the English were given a chance to have their say too. So let's campaign for a referendum to ask England what she wants. But much more importantly, let's use it as an opportunity to have a broader debate about who we are as a nation and what we want from our politics. I think Labour's constitutional convention should advocate for putting the English question to a vote. My instinct is that we need a proper English parliament, but some prefer regional assemblies, and the jury is still out on the new English votes for English law settlement. But there are complex issues, and no one can complain to have all the answers. So we should get all three on a ballot and let the English people decide. Mr. Hunt warned that the sense of Englishness matters to us more and more, and the Labour Party has fallen on the wrong side of that cultural divide. He pointed to a fellow MP, John Crudas's report on why Labour lost the election, which found socially conservative voters had deserted the party. They value home, family and their country. They feel their cultural identity is under threat. They yearn for a sense of belonging and national renewal. Tradition, rules and social order are important to them, and tragically they feel that Labour no longer represents them or understands their lives. In short, they felt we didn't value England. Mr. Hunt said Labour needs a greater honesty in how we navigate Englishness and politics, particularly when it comes to questions of immigration. The party must go further than a grudging acceptance of populist English culture.
Big sleep out to boost homeless charity. A Winchester homeless charity is aiming for a big boost from the Big Sleep Out 2016. The event in the inner close of Winchester Cathedral will be May the 6th. It is the first major fundraiser of Trinity Winchester's 30th anniversary. Last year's Big Sleep Out saw 150 people attend during the evening and 77 sleeping over, raising over £21,000. Trinity hope that hundreds of local people and businesses will take part in the challenge to raise money for people who are homeless or vulnerable. Since it was formed in 1986 at the Trinity Church Hall in Upper Brook Street, the charity has supported more than 10,000 people by offering emotional and practical support, helping to prevent people becoming homeless, and empowering people to make positive changes. One such person, who has been helped is Jamie, who had a high-powered job and was married with two children. But within a 6 weeks period, he was made redundant, his wife left him, his brother was diagnosed with cancer, and he lost a best friend in a motorbike accident. This led to a deterioration in his mental health. He has become unable to maintain his accommodation, and soon he was sleeping rough. Jamie was diagnosed with depression and made several suicide attempts during this time. Following his discharge from a psychiatric hospital, Jamie started visiting Trinity, where he received counselling and support. He has now moved into a permanent home and is retraining as a mental health practitioner. Jamie said, "Without Trinity's help, I can't imagine where I would be. I owe them my life." Michelle Gardner, Director of Strategy and Fundraising, said, "Jamie's story and many others like it show how vital our work is. Unless you've slept out, you'd never be able to comprehend how difficult, frightening and demeaning it is. We not only aim to raise significant money, but also to get people thinking about the horrors of being homeless or otherwise vulnerable."
Junior doctors strike again. Winchester's hospital doctors struck for the second time in a month yesterday as negotiations stalled on a new contract. Royal Hampshire County Hospital was expecting minimal disruption from the 24-hour walkout. The British Medical Association has backed down from threats to cancel emergency cover, avoiding unprecedented disruption on the wards. Bosses at Winchester, Andover and Basingstoke hospitals met on Monday to review whether clinics and operations could continue. "If anything is going to be cancelled, it's going to be outpatients," duty director Barry Jones told the Chronicle on Saturday. "As we speak now, the prediction is no cancellations." About 40 doctors and supporters rallied outside the RHCH during the first strike last month. Doctors have warned that concessions from the government on their proposed deal are not enough to protect safe working hours. Junior doctor Kathy Paget of the Wessex Industrial Action Committee said, "We still feel that the contract is still not safe for patients and it's definitely not fair for doctors. We have some major fundamental concerns that have simply failed to be addressed." But Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt has accused the BMA of spreading misinformation. Non-emergency clinicians struck from 8 a.m. on Wednesday for 24 hours, 15 longer than they had originally planned. The union chose to keep emergency cover due to lack of notice, which would have put patients at risk. And BMA representative Bala Karunakaran said BMA representative Bala Karunakaran. Harry Diamond, chairman of Healthwatch Southampton, said, "The hospital is doing their best to make sure appointments are not inconvenienced."
Winall store shuts amid closure fears. Another business in Winall has closed due to financial difficulties. The fabric warehouse behind Homebase on Eastern Lane has temporarily closed as the nationwide chain battles to stay afloat. The store's been closed for more than 2 weeks and it's understood that 6 or 7 people are employed there. A spokesman at the company's Liverpool head office said, "The company is in financial difficulty, but we're trying to resolve the issue at the moment. None of us here at head office know anything as of yet." In December, IAC Acoustics on Moorside Road, Winall, collapsed with 111 jobs lost.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling and Valerie Lilly. Thank you to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Maria Head.
Goodbye.
Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye and do enjoy your week ahead. Please post your memory stick back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label in the wallet, please ensure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside. Thank you.